With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership.
Let's come aboard.
Man, I'm feeling great.
I'm doing great.
Happy Wednesday to you, boys and girls. One question only. How do you feel?
Well, I feel good and I'm doing well.
Well, that's all that really matters. And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you want the ability to adjust your loan options in real time, Rocket can. Good morning. Coming up in a half hour from now, Kevin Harvick's going to join us. We'll discuss some NASCAR comings and goings, news and notes, stories of the week with Kevin Harvick coming up on the show in approximately 30 minutes from now. Last 2 days, we've talked a lot about Julian Edelman's retirement and dating back to last week as well, when it appeared that this season would be lost due to knee injury for Edelman. And I want to establish this. I've got nothing but respect for Julian Edelman and his career. He maxed out what he could be in football, in sports, in general. Seventh round pick, converted quarterback, MAC school, not even supposed to make the team, becomes one of the best players in Patriots franchise history and a crucial member of three Super Bowl champions. There is nothing that he has to apologize for with his career. Which is why I dislike the insistence from some that he is a Hall of Famer for Pro Football's Hall of Fame in Canton, because then it forces me to have to talk about what he's not. And I don't want to do that because he was a great player for the Patriots. He just is never going to get into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And yet one of my good friends, Adam Kaufman, is walking that plank. And I would try to steer him away. Don't do it, Kauf. Don't do it. But tweets live in infamy. And so he is here on the show to defend his point and make the case for Edelman to be a Pro Football Hall of Famer. I want to correct one thing that I said earlier in the show when we were talking about it. He would not need consensus in the room. There's 48 Hall of Fame voters. He would need 80% of the room for Pro Football Hall of Fame induction. Joining us here on the show from WBZ News Radio in Boston is my friend Adam Kaufman. Kauf, good morning.
Well, first I just want to say I appreciate you having me on right before Kevin Harvick. It makes a lot of sense since I know we're just going to go in circles for the next 15 minutes.
That's good. That's excellent.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's early. I just got up, but this is perfect. Look, man, I mean, for people that don't know, maybe you've talked about this, we have a text chain. Us, you know, a couple other buddies, and this has been a real talking point for the better part of a few days, obviously. And you guys just going back and forth to the point where, like you said, like, yeah, you know, I don't want to have to be that guy that poo-poos Julian Edelman's career to you know, condemn things that he achieved just because of what he didn't achieve. But others don't even hesitate. Like, one of the guys on our text chain sent out an article this morning that's headlined on Twitter, you know, "I look at a total of 15 wide receivers with great Pro Football Hall of Fame credentials, none of whom retired in the last 4 days." People are just getting snarky on the Julian Edelman thing, the poor guy. Whereas he has, it's not like he's ever talked about the Hall of Fame. And all I can do is look at these tweets and look at these texts coming through and just sound like, you know, the dude in the Big Lebowski and just go, well, that's just like your opinion, man. I mean, I just don't think it's as laughable as everybody else does. You will, because you said tweets live in infamy, you will notice. And I know that your program in particular takes my tweets as gospel. So let's remember what I wrote. Let's remember what I wrote, DA. I didn't say Julian Edelman is a Hall of Famer, or Julian Edelman, you know, when he's eligible in a handful of years, just you wait, he's going to hear his name called. No, I said I feel he belongs in the Hall of Fame. Now, it may take 20 or 30 years for him to get there. You know, it's when he's eligible in 2025 for the Patriots Hall of Fame to get his red jacket, sure, probably going to hear his name called, if not that year, the next year. Canton, the gold jacket? No. I know that if that ever happens, it's going to take a long time. I just don't think it's just this clear-cut, no-brainer, absolutely, he does not belong, because I think that you can make a case. You can make a case. Would he get in before Torrey Holt or Reggie Wayne, or, you know, everyone likes to highlight Hines Ward? No, I don't think he would. I'm not even saying he should. I'm saying those guys don't matter in my mind. Like, they all belong in the Hall of Fame as far as I'm concerned, and they could get there. And Julian Edelman could get there. And I could run down a whole bunch of different numbers and reasons why, and I'm happy to do it, but I'm sure you have a question.
Well, I guess my first question would be, because I'm not here just to badger you on this point, because I just frankly think that there is not a reality to saying he can get into the Hall of Fame. I don't think he'll ever have a resume. It'll only get diminished in time as more wide receivers stack up with better numbers, where 80% of the voters will vote in a guy that never made a Pro Bowl. I just don't think there's ever going to be a reality that we exist in where in the future 80% of the voters say that guy was a Hall of Famer. So I don't even really think it's a debate. I don't think it's ever a reality. So I guess my first question would be, do you honestly think in our lifetime we'll see it, or you just believe in your heart that he's a Hall of Famer?
I would say it's a little of column A, a little of column B. I, you know, obviously, like, would I bet my mortgage that he's going to be a Hall of Famer? I mean, that probably wouldn't be a good fiscal investment. But do I think that he belongs there? Yes. Do I think that he will one day get there? And when I say one day, like, you know, we're going to be old and gray and talking about the good times at Syracuse, living at the Varsity? Like, yeah, I mean, maybe, but it's going to be that long. It's, you know, this isn't, we're not talking about Tom Brady, we're not talking about Bill Belichick, we're not talking about Rob Gronkowski, but we are talking about a guy, again, who has a case, okay? We remember, obviously, the Super Bowl MVP against the Rams, which I heard some, I think it was Mike Florio say, like, he basically won by default. No, he was dominant in that game, running all around the field, making plays, putting them in position to win that game in a game where otherwise they're really wasn't any offense. He made, as we know, the catch against the Falcons in what was the biggest comeback in Super Bowl history, and certainly the greatest catch in Super Bowl history. And
okay, let's back off on the greatest catch. Lynn Swann had a couple of great catches, and Tyree had the catch. It's one of the great catches.
Fine, one of. For all the squabbling and. You know, nitpicking that I'm sure we'll do, we don't need to spend the entire time on that. One of. Touchdown pass against Baltimore, as we know, to Danny Amendola, which helped that 2014 run, 2015 playoffs. The game-winning touchdown in the Super Bowl against Seattle. So there are a lot of moments, okay? There are a lot of moments that plenty of guys, some Hall of Famers or others with Hall of Fame cases, who absolutely have more impressive regular season numbers, they don't have these moments. Now, for people that just, you know, I don't know why in general, this is not a Julian Edelman thing, this is an in general thing. I don't know when it is that we started just undervaluing the postseason and caring more about fantasy stats in general. You know, in the case of Julian Edelman, as we know, and I'm sure you've highlighted it, second all time to Jerry Rice in playoff catches and playoff yards. If you want to talk about regular season, or I should add to that, on top of that, Michael Irvin, he is tied with Michael Irvin, a Hall of Famer, by the way, with the most 100-yard playoff games, 6. He is third in yards in Super Bowl games all time. Now, as far as regular season goes, and he was only a full-time wide receiver for 6 years.
Okay, so Koff, I want to tighten this up because I want to get to the parts that you and I agree on so we don't have to keep going over this.
Fine.
He was an elite playoff receiver.
Okay.
And a mediocre regular season receiver. He had many, many wonderful January and February moments, and those are absolutely his highlights. My question would be, what is the historical precedent to a player that was so mediocre in the regular season and had such a wonderful playoff career that he gets into a Hall of Fame? And I will ask this about any sports Hall of Fame, baseball, football, basketball, hockey. Who was just a pure playoff guy that got into the Hall of Fame on that?
I would say if there are any good comps, and I'll credit my guy Adam Rank over at NFL Network, who has been, because he is a Julian Edelman's a Hall of Famer proponent, and he has been spouting out some names. Your closest comps, if you were to make any, would be Michael Irvin to some degree, but then maybe more so Lynn Swann, who did not have very good stats. You know, he never had a 1,000 yards. He had some playoff success, not nearly to the degree of Julian Edelman, but of course he gets credited for kind of transcending the position, and so obviously he got in there at a time when, I'm not going to say it was ever easy to get in Canton, but it was maybe less complicated than it is now. Fred Biletnikoff is another guy that you could use as a comp. Those are a few justifiable comps in the case of Julian Edelman. What I will add to that, too, though, even looking beyond comps, is let us remember, you pointed this out earlier with the 80% needed, it is subjective. This whole thing, Hall of Fames in general, Canton or otherwise, are so incredibly subjective to where, you know, some people, and we've seen it, articles have been written, you know, it's another thing we were looking at in our text chain yesterday, articles have been written where some are going to look at Julian Edelman and talk about him in the way that Bill Belichick always has. You know, this undeniable winner and competitor and, you know, what he grew from, as you said, converted quarterback and seventh rounder and punt returner and special teamer and you know, at times a defensive back to, you know, all that he went on to achieve where, and, you know, you say that, like, he had these mediocre regular season stats. Well, sure, collectively, on the whole, compared to, again, a Hines Ward and some of the guys that are already there. But there was a 6-year period of time, like I was starting to say earlier, where he averaged 7 catches a game, which was 4th in the NFL during that time. He was not mediocre. He had a window. Maybe it was too small a window in the eyes of some, and I get it. But he had a window where he
that
was
window
dominant.
It involved no Pro Bowl, so he was neither the 4th through the 6th best wide receiver in his conference. How can
Look, man,
you say that that was a great
truly,
window?
The not being an All-Pro thing, I get it. Like, I didn't look at Julian Edelman and think All-Pro either. The fact that he never made a Pro Bowl, honestly, I don't even really understand. I mean, they give those things out like candy. I don't get how he never made a
because
Pro Bowl.
Because he was
so
never one of the 4 best wide receivers in his conference. That's why.
Yeah, I think we're maybe he got overshadowed at certain
by
points.
By what?
Well,
by,
I mean,
by what?
I
he
mean,
played in all
the,
of the big games.
The scope
he played
of his own team at points. I mean, obviously, like, you know, it. He was.
He didn't play with Randy Moss.
Away from Rob Gronkowski's numbers because obviously they were elite. But I mean, at times, like, he was responsible for getting them down the field, and then Gronkowski would get the touchdown. You know, there are so. For people that want to, you know, highlight the 36 career touchdowns, like, I get it. You know, he was never a dominant touchdown scorer. I mean, not in a single season. It's like I said at the beginning. We can sit here and I can understand every single. I've read the articles, or I have my own intuition. Like, I can understand all the different cases against Julian Edelman being a pro football Hall of Famer. I can. He doesn't have this slam dunk case. But I do think my whole thing with the tweet and this conversation is I think a case could be made that is not ridiculous. That's
but
all.
Every,
that
I guess
get in
every,
one
my
day.
Point is, though, and you're my friend, so this is none of this is obviously in bad will or anything. I respect your opinion, etc. I just can't find a path to get into the Hall of Fame for him. That's my problem with the argument. It's not a fair comp to put him with Michael Irvin. Michael Irvin was an all-decade team. So he is one of the four best wide receivers of his decade. Okay, he also made five Pro Bowls. That is not a comp. Lynn Swann was an all-decade team in the 1970s, a three-time Pro Bowler. That's not a comp. He's one of the four best wide receivers of his decade. Fred Biletnikoff was a four-time Pro Bowler, and you might want to make the argument he was not an all-decade team guy. Four Pro Bowls versus zero, not necessarily dominant. That's fine. But Biletnikoff doesn't get into the Hall of Fame based on just postseason stats. He gets into the Hall of Fame because in the 70s, there really isn't a great passing league. And so the little that you did had to be weighed against it. Now, Edelman plays in the most explosive offensive passing era ever, doesn't make one Pro Bowl, certainly doesn't make an all-decade team, and there's 250 players above him in NFL history that have caught more passes. If you want to say he's an elite postseason player, no doubt about it. But the people that say, well, then why would you put in Eli? He gets in based on pure postseasons. Eli retired as a top 10 passer in attempts, completions, yards, and touchdowns. His regular seasons put him historically in the top 10. He'll get passed because it's a passing era. But the same thing with Edelman. By the time he comes up, there's going to be another 50 guys that have caught more passes. There is no path to putting Edelman in the Hall of Fame because there is no historical precedent to having such an unimpactful regular season career and that being enough to get you into Canton.
I think the only path that he has, the only path, again, it's not regular season to your point. We all know that. It's not regular season. The only path that he has are those signature moments, the, as you said, elite postseason play, regarded for, you know, all that he accomplished there and the three Super Bowl wins and Super Bowl MVP and on and on and on with the ranking next to Jerry Rice. And that's going to be something that, you know, it's going to be a while, you know, if ever, that somebody does come across those numbers. And maybe in this passing era that does happen. You know, maybe he gets passed in that conversation as well in time. But if he does have any path, it's people looking back and remembering again and putting more emphasis than historically has been done on the clutch play, on those moments, and also being, if not, it's debatable, but being the best receiver, quite frankly, in Patriots history, and if not the best, certainly the most important and during the most significant era, the most significant dynasty, arguably anyway, in NFL history. That is his path. Now, it depends because, again, it is subjective. Like, there isn't this, it's like baseball and the character clause. Like, there's, you know, how those voters or an eventual competition committee down the line, how all these people who are not you and me are going to look at this from within down the line, we don't know. I mean, are the odds greater that you're right than I'm right? Of course. Like, I'm not an idiot, but I do think the potential is there, the case is to be made. I mean, there's really not much more I can say about it. Like, I can't invent numbers that aren't there. I can't tell you he was on the, you know, he wasn't all pro, he wasn't a Pro Bowler, he wasn't all decade team, but have you heard about, no, like, that category isn't there, other than, again, clutch play evidence and some of those, you know, intangibles that sometimes get, you know, overvalued by some in sports and laughed at by others in sports. And it's going to play out however it plays out. And at that point in time, you're probably going to be long off the radio and I'm going to be, you know, playing professional mini golf. And like, that's what we're going to be doing for a living. You know what I mean? Like, we just don't know. It's going to take time.
I also wonder if he might not be hurt because of the steroid thing. He did get suspended and tested positive
for
PEDs.
It's a ding. For sure it's a ding.
That's
a ding. Four gamer is a ding.
And then also, it could go one of two ways, but there's going to be a lot of Patriots that get into the Hall of Fame because of this 20 years of success. In 5, 10, 15 years, that might also hurt him because you've got to put in, you know, five other guys above him that are absolutely deserving. So there could be a bit of a Patriots fatigue. Let's move on from that because I got one more question for you before we got to wrap up. The last time we had you on, you said you hated watching the Celtics team, and now they've ripped off 7 of 10 in the last 4 in inspirational fashion a couple of times. Do you still hate the Celtics because they're going to rope you in and then kill you in the playoffs?
So it's honestly with the Celtics team, it's and for any Celtics team, for any team that I enjoy watching, the rope me in factor as a sports fan, like, it's real, but it's not the end-all be-all. The end-all be-all is just being an enjoyable team to watch, and hopefully, obviously, there's a ceiling, and there's been a lot of success here in the last couple of decades in Boston with that ceiling, as we know. With the Celtics, they are much more enjoyable to watch right now, but it's not because all of a sudden, like, I think they're good, they've flipped this switch. That's not what it is. It's that now they're out there, one, the give a bleep meter that we always talk about, the compete level, if you will, is actually, you know, closer to a 10 than a 2. And on top of that, it's just the way they're doing certain things. Like Jason Tatum, we've always known, you know, he's an all-star, he is a budding superstar. Some would say he's already a superstar. The potential is through the roof, you know, for him and for Jaylen Brown. But it's the little things that haven't been there, specifically with Jason Tatum, getting to the line, you know, actually like drawing contact and not just living in isolation play. The growth within his game that we're starting to see, and he's young. He's very young. He's 23 years old. But some of these aspects of growth that, you know, where you get frustrated is you sit and watch and you say, man, I mean, just stop, like, living from 20 feet away or around the key or going in for a dunk when you have a lane. Like, draw contact. Go to the free throw line, you know, 6, 8, 10, 12 times in a game. And, you know, never mind what that's going to do for you statistically. It just changes the offense. It makes it, you know, a more entertaining brand of basketball. And part of that comes back to just what you think of this day and age we live in the NBA with three-point shooting in general. But to, you know, to easily answer your question, it's a more fun team to watch, but it's trying harder, it's competing better, and it's showing people a little bit closer to, again, playing to its talent level and showing what they're capable of come to playoffs. I still don't think they're a contender. Still don't think they're going to win a championship, but if everything broke right, could they get to the, you know, to the conference finals? Sure. Are they probably going to bow out in round two? Probably. But if they keep playing like this the rest of the way versus what we saw the first half plus of the season, it's just a totally different attitude.
Yeah, I'm aligned with you on that. I think you're right about that. It's a different attitude. Potential's a little greater. Probably flames out in the second round at best. Something breaks their way in the conference finals. Maybe they get there. They're not going to win a championship, but I agree with you on the last couple of weeks of Celtics basketball. Adam Kaufman, WBZ News Radio, joining us from Boston. Always great to talk to you, Kauf. Be well. We'll talk again soon, buddy, and look forward to that text chain.
Always good to sound like the Zach Galifianakis GIF with all the numbers floating in front of him trying to make this case. Appreciate you, buddy.
Okay. When we come back here on the show, Kevin Harvick's going to join us. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Too much fun with audio.
He saw one franchise get a new stadium with luxury boxes and therefore get new ways of income.
The DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. Let us clear our throats here on the DA Show, CBS Sports Radio, every single morning, 6 until 10 Eastern Time, 3 until 7 Pacific. You can always listen to us on hundreds of affiliates nationwide and north of the border, also on SiriusXM 206, and stream us using the CBS Sports app or the new Odyssey app. The formerly known as the Radio.com app is now the Odyssey app. Update it, listen to us, or listen to us on the old Radio.com app, whatever you got on your phone, every single morning. We'll have Kevin Harvick joining us shortly, but first, Andrew Bogish has our headlines this morning. Mr. Bogues, good morning.
DA, good morning again. Attorney Tony Busby said last night he is refiling all 22 lawsuits against Deshaun Watson using the accusers' real names. Two judges ordered more than half of those accusers to use their actual names. Last week, there was another hearing for the remaining cases this afternoon. Watson's side says one of the 22 women is dropping her suit. Ohio State QB Justin Fields throws for NFL teams for a second time today. The Panthers, Patriots, and Niners among those scheduled to attend. Utah's 24-game home win streak ended two nights ago, so the Jazz started a new one last night.
Here comes Niang, flares it to the wing. Bogdanovich, right side three. Scar tissue broken through. Right corner three up and in.
That's David Locke on Jazz Radio. Bojan Bogdanovich led Utah with 23 in a 106-96 victory over the Thunder, who have now dropped 7 in a row. The Suns took down the Heat, 106-86. The Celtics pushed their win streak to 4, 116-115 in Portland. The Lakers winning in Charlotte, 101-93. And the Clippers outscored the Pacers, 126-115. Paul George had 36, improving to 4-0 back in Indy. Be very quiet. Adam Duvall is hitting.
2-2. Dayton to Duvall. A high fly ball left center field, racing back in. Ciarte at the wall. Goodbye! Home run, number two on the night for Duvall. He's knocked in seven in the ball game. And the Marlins blow it open. It's 14-6.
That started like he was putting for the Masters win on 18. Glenn Geffner on Marlins Radio. Two homers and seven RBI for Duvall against his previous team. Miami, a 14-8 victory in Atlanta. The Cardinals roughed up the Nats 14-3. And the Padres' four-game win streak ended 8-4 in Pittsburgh. The Jays beat the Yankees 7-3. The Angels losing in KC 3-2. Hockey last night, Nashville smacked Tampa Bay 7-2. The Preds have won 5 of 6 and 13-16. The Panthers 3-2 OT winners in Dallas, and the Capitals smoked the Flyers 6-1. And the quarterfinal stage, Champions League ends today. Dortmund hosts Man City down 2-1 on aggregate, and Liverpool hosts Real Madrid in a 3-1 hole. DA, back to you.
Thank you, Bogues. Appreciate it. Waiting on Kevin Harvick to join us this morning here on the show. You can always tweet at us, DA on CBS. What was that, Pete? We got him. Excellent. Standing by here on the DA show, he's going to pilot the number 4 Hunt Brothers Pizza Ford Mustang in Sunday's Toyota Owners 400 at the Richmond Raceway at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. He is right now currently 8th in the point standings in the Cup Series. Joining us here on the DA show is Kevin Harvick. Kevin, good morning. How you doing?
Doing great. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for joining us. You have been incredibly consistent over the course of your career. I mean, since 2015, you've never finished worse than ninth. You're always a top 10 guy, once again in the top 10 this year. Let's start off with how you felt the season began and where you are right now. Are you starting to get into more of a flow, more of a rhythm with you and your team?
Yeah, it's been, it's definitely been a good several years for sure. I think right now for us as a team, the speed of our cars is a little bit off of where we need it to be. So we've been scrambling, trying to just get, solid finishes with the position that we're in right now. We got to get our cars back to the speed that we need to lead laps and score some more stage points. But our team's done a really good job of dealing with the circumstances that we're in and trying to get those solid finishes that we've had. To start the year has been a lot of work for everybody, and they've done a really good job of making the most out of where we are right now.
Yeah, a number of writers have pointed out how your speed numbers have been down. Does that create a different type of driving for you? Is it a different approach that you have to take if that's the case with the car?
Yeah, well, the one weekend that I kicked myself in the butt for is Las Vegas, because we should have finished eighth or ninth there, and I wound up, knocking both front fenders off. And in the scenario, from the speed standpoint that we're in, you have to get those. You have to get every single point that you can get, on every single weekend, just to make sure that you don't put yourself in a hole that you can't get out of. So. I know that the guys will, figure it all out, and we've been in this position before, and it's definitely a very different mindset to have to put yourself in position to do that. But our season is so long, you really have to focus on making sure that you're in the right spot when you get to the end of race 26. And we've been on both sides of this fence. We've been slow starters. We've been fast starters. We've run good all season. We've experienced it all. So, we definitely have to, continue to be in this particular mindset until we 100% get it fixed. And like I said, I think everybody's doing a great job of just making sure that we're doing that right now. And getting the most out of each weekend is very important right now.
Kevin Harvick joins us this morning here on the show. And I think that's a really interesting point that you bring up, the duration of a season. It is a long season. It goes through the spring, the summer, into the fall. And today there's more scrutiny and attention and criticism that comes along with everything that happens in sports. How do you keep an even keel knowing that there's such a long way to go when every weekend is kind of picked apart, scrutinized, and criticized from the outside?
Yeah, well, the outside world doesn't really affect me because I don't really pay attention to most of it. So, for me, that's always been the best way to go about it. And that's no offense to you and your job. You have a job to do, and everybody else from the outside of our team has a job to do. But that doesn't mean that I have to pay attention to it or put any stock into what is said or what is not said, because I have no idea. And honestly, I don't really have time to worry about that stuff because it really doesn't make a difference in the communication that I have with my team, because that's the most important thing right now, to make sure that you pick out those details of every single weekend, to make sure that, you know, you're part of the process of putting the right pieces back in place to the hole that you have in the performance. So, you know, that's really important. I think a lot of a lot of people have a tough time doing that. I have no problem doing that. It makes some people mad with the way that that we go about those types of things. But it's the best thing for the team to be as low key as possible in these types of situations, so that we can keep our heads down and work on fixing the problem, and that's the most important thing.
Okay, so we will note that. Kevin Harvick, not a loyal DA show listener, nor CBS Sports Radio loyal listener. Got it. Just kidding, Kevin.
For sure.
Kevin Harvick joining us this morning on the show. You know, there's a lot of drivers that use social media to reach out to fans, and so they hear the good and the bad. And this happens with all of us in the media or in the sports world or public places. Do you find that to be a distraction if other drivers are kind of engaging in that, but then also getting a lot of the criticism that comes with it?
Yeah. So social media for me is I've kind of gone both ways with it. I've used it for everything. I've used it for nothing. I've used it for, I've done social media pretty much since it started. So, you know, the kind of the, where I've landed on all of that is to, I'll get in those moods where, you know, I'll get on there and banter around, but social media, I try to use to my benefit and my benefit only. And, you know, because there's so much that you can get yourself buried into on social media, that you just have to be so very careful and getting yourself wound up, because it's hard to take back those words that you type once you push send.
Yep.
So it's, you know, you have to be, and we preach this to a lot of our young drivers, you know, that whether you have, you know, 5 followers or 100,000 followers isn't going to matter if you do or say something on here that shouldn't be on social media. So, I love the fact that social media, and it's a very useful platform, but in our world, I just can't stand the fact that complaining on, especially on Twitter, getting on there and just complaining about something I'd rather talk to you and complain about it than type it, because I just feel like it has more merit when it comes out of your, you know, when the words come out of your mouth, it's much more impactful than typing it on the keyboard. But social media is, you know, it's a part of our world, and you have to participate in it. You just have to be very, very careful in how you utilize it.
Yeah, that's smart. I think that's a good way to approach it. As we were talking about before, your consistency has been amazing over the last 6-7 seasons, consistently in the top 10. What would you attribute that ability to being so consistent in being? Is that attitude that you're talking about, not getting too high, too low? Is it mostly about the crew and the car that you're driving? What can you really point to?
Well, I think that goes back a number of years, just in how I was taught to race. And you know, when I started racing, whether it was go-karts or late models, it was, you know, if I wanted to go to the racetrack next week, you had to survive with something that was raceable. I mean, I learned that really fast my first year of late models. I think I only got to run 7 races because I wrecked the car every time we went out on the racetrack, and it took us a month to fix it because we couldn't afford to go out and just buy the parts and put it all back together. So, you know, it's also something that was just ingrained in my head, not only from the time that I started racing from my father, but the whole time that I was at RCR. And you know, when you have a 15th place car and you can finish 10th with it, that's a victory. But don't try to force it, you know, trying to make a 15th place car a first place car, because then you try to wreck it. And, you know, being able to, you know, have that reality in your head and know that you know, sometimes finishing 15th is way better than finishing 30th and you know, having the car wadded up. And so that was finishing races is very important, knowing the capability of your car. You know, and I think in today's world, there's not a lot of them that realize that. So, you know, when you can realize that and you can you know, have a 15th place car and finish ninth with it, which happens a lot because so many of them just, you know, make so many mistakes that you can really capitalize on weekends where, you know, you're not where you need to be from a performance standpoint.
Before I let you go, I know you're an avid Flyers fan. Been a tough season watching the Philadelphia Flyers this season. How it's been?
Yeah, well, you know, for me, I've always, you know, look, I got introduced to the Flyers because of Jeff Carter. And so Jeff and I became, you know, really good friends. And you know, so I've kind of followed him around. I knew nothing about hockey, you know, until we did a little media deal together back in 2000 and, gosh, I don't even remember, 7, 8, 9, somewhere right around there with Jeff. And so I've kind of followed Jeff around and obviously Jeff is now going from the LA Kings to the Pittsburgh, So it's fun to, especially when you get to playoff hockey time. So, you know, I've my TV time has been limited. I have two kids that are homeschooled and we spend a lot of time at home and right now when I go inside to watch TV, if my little girl comes in, it's usually Jurassic Park or some sort of dinosaur show that gets turned on the TV. So, and by the time it's time to go to bed and watch TV, then you're so freaking tired that you can't hardly hold your eyes open from following them around all day. So, my intake of sports has been a lot less than it used to be, but all in a good way with my kids.
Forget sports radio or sports television. You are locked into dinosaur cartoons and movies with your daughter. That's what Kevin Harvick is watching. Kevin Harvick's going to pilot the number 4 Hunt Brothers Pizza, Ford Mustang, and Sunday's Toyota Owners 400, the Richmond Raceway at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. You can watch that, obviously, and listen to it as well across the country. Very cool to have Kevin Harvick joining us on the show. Race begins live coverage provided by Fox and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. Kevin, really cool to catch up, man. Thanks so much. Good luck coming up this weekend and the rest of the season as well.
All right. Have a great day. Thanks for having me.
You too. Kevin Harvick, our guest this morning on the show. Excellent stuff from Kevin. I always really enjoy our conversations with the NASCAR drivers. They're always got good stuff to talk about, good conversationalists, interesting to talk about a number of different things, and Kevin certainly was one of those guys that's a really good conversation. That was cool. When we come back here on the show, Advanced Analytics and your epic fail, DA, CBS Sports Radio.
No one knows what analytics is. They think it's like a bunch of nerds doing math, which I don't know, maybe that's what it is.
It's time now for the Mothership's Advanced Analytics.
Jamal Murray is done for the season, out with the ACL tear, which takes the Nuggets out of the NBA Finals conversation, I think, in my estimation, and most of other people's as well. So we asked you guys today, who do you think is coming out of the West? 37% of you said the Jazz. You're picking the number one seed Utah Jazz. 35% said the Lakers, who are the 5 seed right now. You're taking LeBron and AD getting healthy. 16% said the 3-seeded Clippers, and only 12% said the 2-seeded Phoenix Suns. In the last decade, the West has won 6 NBA titles. Teams of the East are now 24 games under 500 against the West this year. Teams of the East, 24 games under 500 against the West this year. The Lakers have the most Western Conference titles, 19 NBA Finals appearances. The Clippers have never won a Western Conference championship, have never gone to the NBA Finals. Tweets coming in. Wiscomic tweet, the argument that I'm having in my head is this. You can't tell the story of the NFL without talking at length about the Pats dynasty. And you can't tell the story of the Pats dynasty without mentioning Edelman in the first couple of sentences. I mean, yes and no. You can't necessarily use that as a delineator because you can tell the story of the NFL without Hall of Famers. And that's the key here. You can't tell the story of the NFL without David Tyree. You can't tell the story of the NFL without Nick Foles. You can't tell the story of the NFL without Jeff Hostetler, Scott Norwood. Just because they're part of the lengthy encyclopedia of the NFL does not make them a Pro Football Hall of Famer. And Edelman was an excellent piece of the dynasty, but only impactful in the legacy part of the game, the historical part of the game in the playoffs. And that's a really important thing to mark that line. You know, there are other things that have to be weighed in besides just the postseason, because how else does Steve Largent get into the Hall of Fame? How else does Cortez Kennedy get into the Hall of Fame? How do guys like LaDainian Tomlinson get into the Hall of Fame if they don't have that body work in the playoffs? It has to be that you are also great against the full catalog of your players, opponents, and schedule. And if you're middling in that but great in the playoffs, that's not enough to get you into those halls. But you can be part of the legacy of the NFL, no doubt. Let's get your epic fail of the morning, boys and girls. We realize that Mraz would make the perfect sitcom star of the Fresh Prince of Bayshore. Here it is, your epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
Well, to be fair, you are as much royalty as Prince was. He was the Prince of Minneapolis royalty. You're the Prince of Bayshore.
Welcome to Quickie Burger. May I take your order?
Yeah, 2 Frozy Fudge Blasts.
Hey, new sitcom on CBS.
Who we kidding? Throw in a number 4.
It's the Prince of Bayshore. Bump. West Babylon, born and raised on the playground is where I spent most of my days.
When did you hear the word cancel? Give me both.
At the drive-thru is where I spent most of my days.
It's West Babylon, born and raised at the drive-thru is where I spent most of my days.
It's not bad.
Chilling out, relaxing, eating Big Macs. Playing flag football outside of the school.
May I bucket size you for an extra 70 cents?
My man, I like the cut of your jib.
That's good. That's good. Oh, get Kevin James to play that.
The Fresh Prince of Bayshore.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
You could see the meme, the Photoshop that the Wizard of Watch DA, Dr. Doom, has whipped up. It is Fresh Prince in a crazy 90s shirt with overalls on, one overall over his shoulder, pointing at the camera with a flat top, and it's Mraz's face. And it is brilliant. Just brilliant. One of the best memes ever. I'm going to have to tweet that out, DA on CBS. Also on Instagram, I'm going to post this as well because I just love that meme. By the way, we were reminded by a listener that Prince, because we were talking about how Prince was not a real prince. Mraz thought he was a real prince. Prince was, and that was not an artistic name. That was his actual given name. Oh. Prince was given his father's stage name. His father's stage name was Prince Rogers. So his dad, who was a jazz singer, I believe, or maybe he was a songwriter, his stage name was Prince Rogers. He gave his son the name Prince. And Prince did not like that name throughout his childhood. He preferred being called Skipper. Imagine Prince became Skipper. And he became a rock legend as Skipper, as the artist formerly known as Skipper.
Wow, learned something new every day. Had no idea that was his real name.
Yeah, that's Prince's real name. And you were at his mansion after Prince passed away, but you were invited to his mansion as part of the pretty people at the Super Bowl.
Perhaps I should not have been included on the invitee paperwork.
You were a plus one.
I was, but, you know, still had to sign my name there, you know. Check my phone at the door.
So someone at Prince's estate actually has your name in a book somewhere, like visitors?
somewhere somebody's passed through, absolutely.
Well, that's like when you go through your wedding registry and you're like, oh, that person came to the wedding? Wow. Remember that. I got a card from them? Weird. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer. Pete the Body Bellotti, Wheels of Steel and audio director. Thanks to Andrew Bogish on your headlines and Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA. Be good and be good to one another. See you tomorrow. The Mothership disconnects.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.